WMAL News at 7. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. A scary night for passengers on a Frontier Airlines plane arriving at Reagan National. The flight coming in from Denver landed and slid into the mud at the end of the runway, according to the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority. Frontier says none of the 151 passengers or six crew members on board were injured. Passengers were bused to the terminal. One tweets, "The plane sat in the grass for about an hour before that happened. The airline is now trying to figure out what went wrong." Earlier in the day yesterday, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam greeted some people at the new 14-gate American Airlines concourse at Reagan National. It replaces the dreaded Gate 35X.
What an improvement this is for passengers. You can already see the excitement as you look around and see how enthusiastic folks are to finally get out and about and do some fun things.
This summer, there will be up to 85 daily departures scheduled from the gates in the new concourse. Good news for gun owners in California. A federal judge ruled the state's ban on what it refers to as assault weapons is unconstitutional.
The ruling from federal judge Roger Benitez found the state's 30-year-old law banning so-called assault weapons unlawfully deprives law-abiding Californians of weapons commonly allowed by most other states and by the U.S. Supreme Court. The judge also pointed out that murders by knife occur 7 times more often than murders by rifle in California. Governor Gavin Newsom calls the assault ban ruling a direct threat to public safety and the lives of Californians. The state is likely to appeal. Jack Callahan, Fox News.
A sad discovery made by the family of a man who went missing after going for a swim in the Potomac River on Memorial Day. Yesterday, the family of 26-year-old Frankie Sapacio found his body in the water near Scott's Run. That's the area where witnesses say they saw him go under while he was swimming, but never came up. The Worcester Police Department in Massachusetts is mourning the death of a hero.
38-year-old Emmanuel Manny Familia, a 5-year veteran of the police department, drowned while trying to rescue a 14-year-old boy at a pond. Authorities say the teen was located by divers and rushed to the hospital, but tragically passed away.
Fox's Bill Malugin. A federal appeals court upholds the conviction of a North Carolina man who posted an anonymous threat on social media to lynch a Muslim American politician, a political candidate, rather, from Virginia.
Friday's ruling from a 3-judge panel for the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals rejected Joseph Cecil Vandeveer's argument that a threatening tweet that he directed at former state Senate candidate Kasim Rashid contained constitutionally protected speech. The March 2018 tweet included a picture of a lynching and read, quote, "View your destiny." Vandeveer was sentenced to 10 months in prison after a jury convicted him in December of 2019 of interstate communication of a threat to injure a person. Maria Leaf on WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports, the Nats beat the Phillies 2-1. That series continues today at 4:05. The 153rd running of the Belmont Stakes happens today. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the Beltway, listen, I want to start with some good news. I'm looking in the traffic cameras. No reports of any accidents. I don't see any construction being set up. So do the happy dance. You're going to be traveling at the posted speed limit. On 66 in Fairfax County, that is clear, eastbound and westbound. On 95 in Virginia, that's also clear between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, north and south. And in D.C. on 295, 395, and 695, no construction and no accidents. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com to WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Sunglasses and sunscreen, a must today. Temperatures into the low 90s with lots of sunshine, a high UV index as well. Should be fairly comfortable, though, because humidity remains in check. Overnight temperatures back in the 60s, mainly clear, calm. Temperatures tomorrow in the low 90s, but we had a touch more humidity. Still dry as far as storm chances, maybe an isolated one. Monday, temperatures then still in the low 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandergraff in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update. 105.9
FM, It's hour 2 of the Saturday morning update. Thank you for being with us. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent for Newsmax and Newsmax TV, and of course the chief political columnist. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick. A pleasure.
Ongoing contention recently between Democrats and Republicans over the Biden administration's spending plans, including infrastructure, and what is the definition of infrastructure. So Republican Senator Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia goes to the White House, has a private meeting with President Biden. What was the outcome of the meeting, John?
Well, the results leave advocates of an infrastructure bill, to use a phrase of Ronald Reagan's, cautiously optimistic. Senator Capito is the leader of a small band of Republicans who want an infrastructure bill, but in no way, shape, or form are going to accept something that bears Joe Biden's $2.3 trillion price tag. They prefer something more like $1 trillion. Now, word is that the White House is willing to accept the $1 trillion without a tax increase, thus removing the main Republican argument against the measure. The White House reportedly is willing to totally take off the table its earlier proposal to raise the corporate income tax from 21 to 28%. And as for bringing in the needed revenue for the infrastructure, that will be done with stricter enforcement of tax laws and pursuit of Americans who just do not do their yearly obligation of paying Uncle Sam. That's going to take a lot of work, but apparently the president is willing to do that rather than raise corporate taxes in order to get Republicans to the table. So far, based on Senator Capito's statement and the congratulatory statement from the White House tour, they're on the verge.
The other senator from West Virginia, of course, is Democrat Joe Manchin. He and Arizona Democratic Senator Kyrsten Sinema have been the last line of defense against the Senate going completely off the rails. Of course, they are opposed to eliminating the filibuster, and they've held the line on other legislation that the progressives have been trying to push through. Will they continue to hold the line, John, or can the progressives and the Democratic Party put enough pressure on them to cave?
If Joe Manchin can survive casting the pivotal vote for the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court, and standing his ground in favor of the filibuster will be relatively easy. Kyrsten Sinema is another who has tread the middle-of-the-road path because she knows Arizona, while it's grown more Democratic and, in fact, went for Biden in the last presidential election, although, Mr. President Trump, if you're listening, I know you're counting on that recount. In any event, these are lawmakers who have kept to the middle, and they know what their constituency is about. They didn't win by big margins last time, and in fact, Senator Manchin had a particularly rough race in 2018. My guess is that they've gone out so far on the limb in measures such as protecting the filibuster that retreat will mean the left still won't trust him, and the right will give up on them completely. I say they stay.
Headline that you wrote this week piqued my interest, John. Pennsylvania Democrats veer hard left. In your opening paragraph, less than a month after key Democratic primaries in Pennsylvania, there are growing signs that the Keystone State's Democratic Party is moving sharply to the left. But we saw the presidential election was pretty close. Just because the party moves to the left, does that mean the voters will move hard left?
No. The last two presidential elections were very close in the Keystone State. And remember, while Democrat Tom Wolf is finishing up his second term in the governor's mansion, Republican Pat Toomey has held the Keystone State's other Senate seat for nearly a decade and will be out of office in another year. Overall, Pennsylvania is a purple state, if you accept the fact that blue is Democrat and red is Republican. Recently, primaries were held for mayor of Pittsburgh, in which a far-left candidate, Ed Gainey, beat Mayor Bill Perdue and is now poised to become the city's first-ever black mayor. In Erie County, the race for county executive by a breathtaking 208 votes, went in the Democratic primary to Tyler Titus, who, if elected in November, would become the highest elected transgender official in Pennsylvania history. I might add that Dr. Titus, who prefers the they, them, and their pronouns of the transgender group, said that they are counting on a strong grassroots support from the party's activist progressive wing, and already the wing helped him get the nomination and will try to help him get elected. This points to far-left nominees for the Senate and the governorship, but it certainly doesn't mean they're going to be elected.
I want to turn to Texas. State office holders in Texas get a lot of national attention. We see Governor Greg Abbott on a lot. We also see the Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick on a lot. We've heard a lot about Ken Paxton, the Attorney General. Alan West has been in politics in Texas recently, but a big move on Friday?
Certainly. Alan West, the former Florida congressman and U.S. Army Reserve Lieutenant Colonel, moved to Texas, got elected state Republican chairman, and yesterday morning resigned his position. This has immediately drawn statewide and national attention on West, his party's first ever black state chairman in the Lone Star State. Will he run for governor, people ask? Well, Governor Abbott is fairly popular and has Donald Trump's endorsement. So there's more interest in the open position of state land commissioner, which incumbent George P. Push is vacating to run for attorney general. Alan West could probably win a primary and election giving his name ID. One thing I should add, as someone who's covered Mr. West for more than 10 years, he is basically a bull who brings along his own china shop. He starts disputes, often finishes them, and carries on causes that he likes in one volume, loud. We'll hear a lot about him if he seeks office, and the attention will be throughout the state and nationwide.
You mentioned George P. Bush, and I guess my question would be, Ken Paxton has quite a bit of popularity in Texas. George P. Bush attempting to go up against him, what are the pros and cons there?
Let's put it on the table. Ken Paxton is under an FBI investigation, and rumors of corruption in office are rampant. His supporters dismiss this as a witch hunt and a fraud, and he remains quite popular with the Republican grassroots. George P. Bush, clean as a whistle and with a name that's universally known, is running. Interestingly, he never invokes the name of his father, former presidential candidate Jeb Bush, or his uncle and grandfather, who were presidents of the United States. Rather, he hands out beer guzzies that feature a cartoon of him and Donald Trump and a quote from the last Republican president. He's the only member of the Bush family who likes me, and I like him. For his part, President Trump has not endorsed Bush, nor has he endorsed the incumbent Paxton. However, one can say this, that many believe, well, in past years, the Bush name was political magic. The state and its Republican Party certainly have passed the Bush family and left it behind. We'll certainly know in the primary next year.
Well, he's certainly the black sheep in the family now, isn't he?
Well, I'd say I think that Thanksgiving and Christmas will be a little more contentious than usual.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Thank you as always, John.
And thank you. And one last thing we should remember last week, the anniversary of Tiananmen Square in China. And as human rights and individuals are mowed down in Hong Kong, let's just remember, someone else built a lady, the goddess of liberty, a long time ago.
Fine thoughts, John. Thank you. And we're at 7:18. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. We're going to talk with Cheryl Atkinson next, but right now, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, from Prince George's County all the way through Montgomery County, literally bridge to bridge, you're not going to tap the brakes on the inner loop or on the outer loop. No construction and no accidents to slow you down. Between the two Beltways, on the VW Parkway and on 95, clear northbound and southbound. In Prince George's County on Route 50, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, nothing to report eastbound or westbound. If you're going over the Bay Bridge, keep in mind two lanes are headed east and three lanes are coming west. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Sunglasses and sunscreen, a must today. Temperatures into the low 90s with lots of sunshine, a high UV index as well. Should be fairly comfortable, though, because humidity remains in check. Overnight temperatures back in the 60s, mainly clear, calm. Temperatures tomorrow in the low 90s, but we had a touch more humidity. Still dry. As far as storm chances, maybe an isolated one Monday. Temperatures then still in the low 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandergraff in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
65 degrees, 719, Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Happy to be back on WMAL. Join me, Dan Bongino, weekdays, noon to 3, on 105.9 FM, WMAL.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Cheryl Atkinson joins us. Of course, she is the host of Full Measure. That's every Sunday morning, 10 o'clock on ABC7, and also the New York Times bestselling author of Stonewall, The Smear, and her latest book, Slanted, How the News Media Taught Us to Love Censorship and Hate Journalism. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I know this is your season finale on Full Measure tomorrow, and you've covered a lot of important stories on the show and also on your website at CherylAtkison.com. And one of the really big ones that you were among the first to really look into were the origins of COVID-19. And you've got an in-depth story on the website with so much in the news about Dr. Anthony Fauci this week. Were the investigations at the State Department quashed? I mean, what happened there? Was there stonewalling going on there? Help us to get the real story on what is going on with the origins of COVID-19 and possible cover-ups.
I think this is perhaps one of the most manipulated stories and most dangerous examples of what happens when we leave it up to big tech and the news media on these narratives to censor and outlaw basically all discussion, particularly in this case, the rational discussion, the very logical questions of did it come from the Wuhan lab? And we allowed, you know, that discussion to be censored for over a year by and large, only to find out it was never a debunked theory. And as I've reported, it was, I believe, always the predominantly accepted theory in the scientific community among those in the know, among those who are not conflicted. A lot of the people who tried to debunk that early on, like Dr. Fauci, or like this scientist, Peter Daszak, who runs a nonprofit that got U.S. tax money that had a lot to do with funding the Wuhan lab. A lot of those people trying to debunk it never disclosed publicly in any obvious way their own conflicts of interest. You know, Dr. Fauci didn't say, hey, it couldn't have come from the lab, but by the way, you should know that we have partnered with that lab and I approved gain-of-function research and I funded it with U.S. tax money from my institute. You know, that I think this is a really big lapse on their part and a big lapse on the media's part not to allow the discussion, which could have brought forth perhaps helpful information that could have changed the course of some things in this horrible disaster.
I know you've posted a letter from Republican senators on your website about the termination of the State Department probe into COVID-19 origins. Where do you think this all goes from here?
I think it's hard to say. You will get some good reporting from some media outlets. Some of them are better now. I still see a lot of mistakes being made, though, even as they're trying to make up for this lost time. But you'll have some good reporting. You'll have some that continue to probably defend what I see as the bad actors who've been proven to have provided dishonest information. And I'm sad to say that I've learned and expressed in my prior books and writings that part of the goal of those who don't want to be exposed, say a powerful interest wants this story manipulated, part of their goal is just to confuse. So they're perfectly happy if you don't know what to think because you're hearing so many conflicting things. And I kind of think that's where we are today with people hearing a lot of mixed messages and not quite sure what to think. But that's, you know, our responsibility to sort through this. And I always advise people based on my experience and my research, when you hear this narrative that's overwhelming in the media to the exclusion of any rational conversation that brings up alternatives or emerging information or contrary views. That means a powerful interest usually is trying to stop you from getting important information for their own reasons. And you should probably go down that trail, the one that they're trying to keep you from finding out about, and that's where you'll find your answers, by and large.
The surge of illegal border crossings this year, you've been covering the southern border for many years, but this year was different, and you were among the first to see this new surge.
Yes, you know, my first visit during this past season, which ends coming up now this week, so we started in the fall, my first trip to the border this season showed pretty good improvements in terms of the wall getting built, ranchers, residents, Border Patrol, everybody reporting that it was making a difference, and that after a previous surge in the 2019 and even the 2017 time period, that really it seemed to be changing, and that there were some policies that had won through court under the Trump administration that were finally taking a grip and seemed to be working. What a difference when I went back a couple of months later after President Biden was elected and found the opposite, you know, how quickly it had changed. And I was on just sort of accidentally on the leading edge of this border crisis. I didn't know that that's what I would find when I was there. And yes, we came back and showed how the wall, work on the wall had stopped literally overnight, had been ordered by President Biden to be stopped. So it's leaving these gaping, unguarded gaps where the cartels can exploit and move through there. We saw this almost immediate surge. I mean, it didn't just start overnight, but there definitely was a huge uptick with the election of President Biden and then peaking when I was there in the January-February time period. So very interesting. You know, maybe I've been there a dozen or more times in the past couple of years. I'm going to go back again this summer, and I go and just see what's going on with no preconceived notion of what I have to find. And it's really, it's always very eye-opening to see what's going on.
Well, you can see those and other highlights from Season 6 of Full Measure tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. It is also the season finale for Cheryl Atkinson on the Saturday Morning Update, as I know you travel and do a number of stories during the summer. So we will look forward to rejoining you this fall. And, of course, thank you so much for the information and the really important stories that you bring forward that so many people won't touch and other media outlets just don't cover. So thank you very much for sharing those with us throughout the year, and we'll look forward to seeing you in the fall.
Okay, I love being here, and thank you for having me on and letting me talk about these stories that I think are very important. And I might mention we'll be in reruns this summer with some of our best stuff, but I look forward to seeing everybody with the fresh stories in September.
And during your travels this summer, the stories you're doing, will you be updating CherylAtkinson.com with the things you're seeing so people can kind of stay on top of reality out there?
I will, and I'll be still doing my podcast, the Cheryl Atkinson podcast, and Full Measure After Hours.
Excellent. We're at 7:26. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer's coming up, and KT McFarland, and we're going to get into cybersecurity, ransomware, and COVID-19's origins all on the way.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. A close call at Reagan National last night.
A Frontier Airbus from Denver slid at the end of the runway and ended up in a grassy area. It got stuck in mud, but luckily, no one was injured in the mishap.
Fox's Marianne Rafferty. The runway was closed to air traffic after it happened so investigators could try to figure out what went wrong. A Loudoun County teacher who found himself in the national spotlight speaking after court yesterday, Tanner Cross, sued the school board to be allowed back in the classroom. He was suspended for saying he won't comply with a policy being considered to identify transgender and non-binary students by their preferred names and pronouns.
I went to a school board meeting and respectfully objected to proposed policies. When I spoke, I was thinking about my values, my students, my parents, and my fellow teachers.
A judge is expected to make a ruling Monday. The school board hasn't commented publicly on the lawsuit. The final jewel of horse racing's Triple Crown runs this afternoon.
After serving as the first race of the Triple Crown last year without spectators, as many as 12,000 will be in-house at Belmont Park for the 153rd running of the Belmont Stakes today. While there won't be a crown winner this year, Preakness champ Rombauer will look to become the first horse to win both at Pimlico and Belmont, but not in the Kentucky Derby since a Fleet Alex back in 2005.
Fox's Matt Napolitano. In other sports news, the Nats beat the Phillies 2-1. Traffic and weather next on WMAL. WMAL traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In D.C. right now on 295, 395, and 695, including the tunnels and bridges, there is no construction being set up, and I'm looking in the traffic cameras. I don't see any accidents, so you will be traveling at the posted speed limit in D.C. In Virginia on the Beltway, it's all clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop, no construction and no accidents. On 66 in Fairfax County, that's moving smoothly eastbound and westbound. And on 95 between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, nothing to report northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Last weekend disappointed, this weekend not so much, especially if you're a pool lover. Temperatures this afternoon under mostly sunny skies soar into the low 90s, but it will not be too humid. The air remains still dry, so that's comfortable. Overnight temperatures slipping back into the 60s tomorrow, back in the 90s once again. Some added humidity as well. As we head into the work week, the 90s linger. Could be a late day shower or storm by Monday. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandegraff in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
7:37, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us every week at this time. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart and also the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
All right, we're seeing a lot of stories about COVID-19, the origins of COVID-19, and this term gang of function.
Yeah.
Tell us about the research that has been taking place at the Wuhan lab, the relationship to NIH and the U.S. Walk us through this, because it's very confusing, and depending on which perspective you're watching, whether it's Fox or CNN, there's a different slant.
So, yeah, let's just, I think, get right to the heart of it. Gain of function essentially means they're trying to enhance the ability of a disease to infect and kill. That's it. That's what they're trying to do. Now, there's different philosophies of why they're trying to do this. Theoretically, the CNN version as well, they're trying to do this for purposes of creating vaccines which would be able to kill the virus should something happen. And that is a theory. The other theory is that the gain-of-function process was being used by the Chinese for purposes of weapons development, of being able to use a biological weapon of some sort for potentially, offensive purposes. And that's kind of the other side. So, both can be true, by the way. I mean, you can do both. The research results are in the eye of the beholder. You know, you've actually used the same scientific method to get to that point of where you're doing something with an enhanced virus. So that's where a lot of the mystery needs to be sorted out. What is not a mystery is that we funded it. Judicial Watch just came up with documents showing that Fauci did indeed fund this, which I find interesting, Rick, because at first he denied it. So my, as an intelligence officer, anytime someone denies something flat out and gets caught, there's a reason why they denied it, which then this puts it back in the category of why wouldn't you want to talk about this? It's because I think the Chinese have been using the Wuhan lab and other places for potential research in this area. One of the notable things about biological warfare and the reason that people are reluctant to ever use it is because once you unleash a virus, the chances are pretty good you as the releaser are going to be hit as well. But biological weapons are not precise. They tend to infect people who may be on your side, and it really doesn't matter to them. And I think that's what we saw here with China. And I'm not saying that they did a purposeful release. I'm saying once it was released from the lab, which I think most people who are rational now agree upon, once it was released, it did hit the Chinese and it went global, it went all over the world. Theoretically, some of the research, Rick, could be that the Chinese are trying to find a variant which would only attack certain demographics or individuals. And that's very dangerous. As we noted in COVID, young people and younger demographics weren't hit as hard as older demographics. That could have been part of the weaponization or research of trying to change the vector of this thing. So I know this is a lot to digest all at once, but any developed nation with a military engages in research regarding weapons of mass destruction, especially these in the biological warfare arena. The question becomes, as I mentioned in the beginning, the eye of the beholder. Why are they trying to do this? And that's where we need to get to right now about the Wuhan virus outbreak and, you know, how did it happen and what's China going to do to make right the damage it caused the world.
Very interesting. I want to turn to a story out of Los Angeles, which I think has a national message to it. And it all involves the carry of concealed weapons in California. Now, they have a unit in the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. It is the Carry a Concealed Weapon Unit. The sheriff announced that that unit will now, in order to better distribute the licenses to be armed, they will make an expedited process available for people to get firearms in Los Angeles County. What does that tell you about defunding the police and the sort of the hypocrisy? The Democrats defund the police, but now they are encouraging gun sales when they're all anti-gun.
And there was a ruling just overnight that indicates that assault weapons are now going to be unbanned in California. There was a court decision that says you must allow people to have, quote-unquote, assault weapons in California. Well, this is all going in that direction, Rick, because you know, there's millions of new gun owners. One fifth of those are black people. One fifth of those are Latino and others. And then half of the new gun owners are women. And this is all trending in a direction that indicates to me that people are very concerned about their personal safety. And when you have politicians on the left, especially those who are vocal about it, calling for defunding the police and then seeing the results of that, Minneapolis, look no further than Minneapolis to the disaster that's become. And L.A., I think, is very similar by the fact that the L.A. police, as much as I think they do a good, you know, as best they can to prevent crime, you can't be there everywhere you need to be. And I think people have decided to start taking very seriously their own personal protection. The Second Amendment, Rick, is not about guns. It's about personal protection. It's about your ability, your God-given right to be able to defend yourself. And I think it's going to be a trend. Texas just passed constitutional carry. There's almost a majority of states that have that now. I think it's trending to have individuals recognize the importance of the Second Amendment and take it upon themselves to be prepared.
I know you do a podcast every week, the Thought to Action podcast at LondonCenter.org. Tell us about what's on the program these days.
Well, just a few days ago, I did a segment with Jeremy from The Quartering. He's one of my favorite YouTubers. And one of the things I think we older folks don't recognize is there is actually a culture war going on in today's gaming industry, the entertainment industry. And Jeremy's one of the great guys who talks about it a lot, gets in a lot of trouble. So I like talking to him. We did that. And then we just did the Great Reset, part three, where we talk about all the things going on with the issues of Build Back Better, which in our judgment is just code for Marxist redistribution of wealth. And the Build Back Better movement, you know, along with this Great Reset, it's all related to trying to essentially attack the foundations of the family, of democracy, and of free commerce and free trade. So people should check it out. We have a great discussion of all those issues.
You mentioned the reset. I'm just waiting for them to reset all of our taxes, because no matter what they say about, oh, it won't hurt you if you're under $400,000 in income, we're all going to get whacked, believe me.
Well, we want to do a show on that, Rick. By the way, you know, your taxes have no relation to spending. It's been long ago detached. So the government doesn't need your taxes. They're going to spend the money because they can just print it, and that's what they're doing.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, LondonCenter.org. Tony, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Rick.
7:44 Saturday morning update on WMAL. KT McFarland coming up next, but first we're off to the WMAL Traffic Center. Al BD is there this morning.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, as you come in through Prince George's County into Montgomery County on the inner loop or on the outer loop, all the lanes are clear. You're not going to be tapping the brakes. Now, if you're traveling between the two beltways on the VW Parkway and on 95, northbound lanes are at speed and the southbound lanes, no delays there. In Prince George's County on Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge is clear east and west. Bay Bridge, two lanes headed east and three lanes coming west. And on 270 in Montgomery County, that is good between the Beltway and Frederick. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Sunglasses and sunscreen, a must today. Temperatures into the low 90s with lots of sunshine, a high UV index as well. Should be fairly comfortable, though, because humidity remains in check. Overnight temperatures back in the 60s, mainly clear, calm. Temperatures tomorrow in the low 90s, but we had a touch more humidity. Still dry as far as storm chances, maybe an isolated one. Monday, temperatures then still in the low 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandergraff in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
68 degrees now in the nation's capital, 746 on the Saturday morning update.
First thing each morning, O'Connor and Company with Larry O'Connor. Weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on WMAL.
7:48, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by KT McFarland. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, always an honor to have you join us.
Honor and a pleasure on my part.
Thank you. Cybersecurity and ransomware. We've talked about this for a long time, KT. It is now front and center on the national agenda. What are the key points that, number one, the Congress, and number two, the American people, have to understand about the threat of cybersecurity and obviously the ransomware issues with cybersecurity problems?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of things. You know, the obvious one is it's going to get worse and it's going to continue and it's going to escalate. But here's sort of where I come out. Fixing this vulnerability that we have, and we have it uniquely because we have such a large private sector. Our vulnerability isn't, it's not a Republican issue, it's not a Democrat, it's not a partisan issue, because presidents of both parties have tried to defend us against cyber attack and they failed. It's only getting worse. And we're always playing catch up. We're never ahead of the curve. The second thing is government isn't any good at solving this problem. Let's admit it. The best tech experts don't join the Defense Department or the Department of Homeland Security or the FBI. They go to Silicon Valley, and then they refuse to help the United States government, the Pentagon, the Department of Homeland Security. They feel, because of this sort of independent streak, that somehow they're soiling themselves if they have to cooperate and work for the U.S. government. And we've seen it time and again. Yet at the same time, they'll do research for the Chinese military, but not the U.S. military. And the same tech titans who need to help with cybersecurity and cyber defense, they need to do it. Even offensive cyber weapons. When I joined the Trump administration, it was one of the first things I looked at and was told, well, we don't have a lot of cyber offensive capability because it's too provocative. I said, well, wait a minute, everybody else is getting cyber offensive capability. What is our deterrent value here? If we don't have it, how do we deter them from using it against us if we have no retaliation capability? And they said, well, we're focusing on defense. Well, I thought that was a big mistake. So I think we need to take a whole lot of look at why the tech titans, who seem to control everything else we do, why they're refusing to help the U.S. government. And if they don't want to help the U.S. government, then, you know, maybe they've got way too much power, way too much money, and we need to rethink that. And the next thing is, though, with the civilian economy and the private sector, we're not protecting that. We're just leaving that up to everybody. Even the White House press secretary went out this week and she said, well, the BFAC, that's really on the private companies to not have adequate defenses. Well, yeah, they don't have adequate defenses. Why? Because it's expensive. And they're competitive companies. And so, as one senior expert on cyber defenses said to me, she said, you know, look, they don't want to pay for it. It's expensive, and it's easier and cheaper to just say after the fact, oh, we're sorry, change your password on your online account, or pay the ransomware because they have insurance that covers the ransomware. That's got to stop. I mean, we need to have some kind of a national standard to say, if you want to go online, you want to put anything online, you got to do this basic minimum of defending yourself against and hardening against some kind of cyber attack. But the other thing is, you know, without a national innovation plan, we might as well just kiss it goodbye, because we're losing our technological edge. We should see this with the Chinese and the Russians. They have national innovation plans. They have their private sector and their government kind of work together of, oh, we need this capability, we don't need that capability. I'm a big believer in the private market, but I think that we can have American ingenuity and innovation be spurred by, you know, tax incentives, by initial government spending to underwrite, say, against loss, the same way we developed the virus pandemic cures and vaccines. Government basically said to the private sector and the pharmaceutical company, we'll guarantee you against loss. Do this research. If it doesn't pan out, you'll get reimbursed. And so look what we had happen. Against all odds, we developed vaccines within a year. So I think we need to actually look at a big national innovation plan, like we did after Sputnik, 50 years ago.
I want to turn to COVID-19, the origins, the stories this week, and now the major news outlets are starting to wonder about the Wuhan lab after those stories were pretty much dismissed during the Trump administration. You were the former Deputy National Security Advisor in the Trump White House, so you've got a pretty good handle on how all of this plays out in the government agencies and with the Hill, investigations, everything else. Your perspectives on what we're finding out about COVID-19?
Well, I got three issues. You know, what were the Chinese doing at that lab? Were they studying viruses? Were they genetically altering viruses with this gain-of-function research to make viruses more lethal and more contagious? Why were they doing this? And how? Tell me how this is different from creating supercharged bioweapons. I mean, especially because the Wuhan lab is also home to China's military research, virology research. So I don't know that we ever get to the bottom of it, but what's going on at that lab? And then to me, what's now increasingly problematic, what were we doing at that lab? What were we funding? I mean, why are we spending American tax dollars to fund research for the Chinese military in a Chinese lab? If we want to spend money doing research, how about doing it at home? China's a rich country, so why are we paying their scientists? And by the way, what did that get us? Because once the pandemic started, we weren't even allowed in that lab to find out what was going on. The other thing is that as Deputy National Security Advisor, I got to say, this is a big deal if we're doing bioengineering and sort of creating Frankenstein monsters. These are decisions that should have been made at the very highest level of government. I had no idea any of this stuff was going on. And so who are the mad scientists in the bureaucracy who were taking this upon themselves to do it and then to do it in China? I just think there's so many questions, and every day there seem to be bigger questions and scarier questions. So I want to find out, what are the Chinese trying to cover up, and what was the NIH trying to cover up? And then I guess my biggest beef of all goes back to those tech titans. You know, because they censored all reporting and stories on the Wuhan lab leak theory, they really, it's not just an oops, we made a mistake, or, oh, yeah, we caught out because we hate Donald Trump, and if Donald Trump said it, it must have been wrong. They actually, you know, they did great harm to the world, because by refusing to hold China accountable, they enabled China's big lie. And because China said, oh, no, it didn't come from the lab, they're not going to share any of their research. You know, China may be an authoritarian dictatorship, but they really care a lot about world public opinion. And when world public opinion, fed by the tech titans and the social media and the, you know, Washington Post and New York Times and yada, 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 they let China off the hook. And as a result of that, I think a lot of people ended up, you know, being harmed by this, not just mentally and physically, but economically as well. So I'm not going to forgive them. To just say, oops, we made a mistake, not good enough for me, guys. You know, you really owe the world a real debt of responsibility for what you did.
K.T. McFarland, author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And K.T., thank you so much, as always, for your perspectives on this. It's just so critically important to get your overview, because, you know, you get little details, bits and pieces in the news. And again, as I say often, depending on what news outlet you're watching or listening to, you get a completely different perspective on the world than the other news outlets. It's like a 180. So it's always great to get it straight from you, KT. Thanks so much.
Honor and a pleasure.
7:57, and that's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news next.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.